is the I Am Rappaport Stereo Podcast. Live.
You down with Rappaport? Yes, I am. You down with Rappaport? Yes, I am. You down with Rappaport? Yes, I am. You down with Rappaport? Yes, I am.
You better tune in, IamRappaport.com. Cause every single podcast, you know he drops bombs. I seen him on set, a seasoned vet with true talent. Catch him on his way to CrossFit, rocking the New Balance. He asked me to do the track cause he know I rhyme elite. But I'm just waiting for the Robert De Niro line of the week. Breakfast of Champions, toasted bagel, cream cheese and lox. This is I Am Rappaport, the show never stops. You might catch him out in public, stretching his knees. But if you don't listen to the show, yo, wigger please.
Wigger please.
This is the Podcast.
All right. This is it. I'm in here with Kenyon Martin.
My man.
Kmart. It's Michael Rappaport. I Am Rappaport Stereo Podcast.
Talking about?
Two Man Weave. What's the deal, Kenyon Martin?
I'm good, brother. I'm happy to be here, man. I'm excited about this.
I'm excited about it, too, man. First of all, I mean, I seen you play when you were in college. You gave me a pound or two when you were in the league. I was at an all-star game practice one year when you were there. I've been such a fan of yours for so long. So I'm hyped to do this shit. Right. I don't even know where to start. I'll just start with this because your presence in the NBA, like obviously, you know, you could play.
Yeah.
But you had that goon factor, okay? You had that, like, wild card factor. You had that, like, yo, my guys are with me. We ain't taking no shit. Power forward. I'm the first one to curse, and I'm in here with Kenyon Martin. He's laughing.
Because I'll be having to watch my mouth. I get it. Listen, I get it, brother. Hey, because I was going to come right back with you.
He looked like...
You wasn't going to be the only one. You wasn't listen. I wasn't gonna leave you out there hanging.
All right. Messing. You was out there tearing things up.
Yeah.
Well, what were you thinking a week ago when this Charles Oakley situation happened? What do you think of the backlash of it? And what do you think of the Knicks? You played with the Knicks. Yeah. What is your take on the whole Charles Oakley of it all?
For one, they could have. I'm with Oak first and foremost.
Right.
I'm with Oak. I'm on Oak's side no matter what. Because it could have been handled better.
Right.
It definitely could have been handled better, man. Whether we all know that celebrities and players and former players, everybody go through the back. You don't walk through the general admission.
Right.
You don't, he didn't walk through the front.
Especially Charles Oakley.
So they saw him walk in.
In his building.
They saw him walk in.
Right.
That's my thing. So you didn't want to handle this in the back? Or unless they did try to handle it in the back and Oak was like, I paid for these seats, I'm going to my damn seat.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? So then you make a bad situation worse by surrounding him.
Right.
Whatever he was saying, whatever, we don't nobody know the context of the conversation, if there was a dialogue directed at Dolan or not, we don't know.
Right.
He could have been saying whatever. Could have been saying anything. We don't know.
But I think it was like split in the middle.
Yeah, so.
And I think the security, it was just, the security guards like, what the F are you looking at?
Yeah, and then it escalated. Then you surround him. Then he like, what's going on? Then you touch him. He like, don't touch me.
They cut the cameras to him.
Like, I'm with it. Like, for one, you're in my personal space. Then for two, you just put your hands on me.
Right.
I'm a grown man.
And it just got to, and it's happening at the Garden.
And my thing is, they lucky the man didn't start swinging.
Right.
Like, that's, like.
And it really turned nuts.
Yeah, like, they are lucky. That's Oak.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Like, he's been known to punch a person or two or slap a person or two.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? So they lucky it didn't go that way.
They're lucky the most of it was the finger point.
Yeah, that's, you know what I'm saying? That's the gist of it. Or him slap, like, open hand slapping people. Like, that's my thing. Like,
yo, if could you.
I tell myself, if I would have been put in that situation, I would have acted the same way.
Right.
I'm saying, like, don't touch
me. Thank God he didn't slap
me. Yeah, like, don't touch me and don't, you like, you're in my personal space.
Right.
So I get it. I'm with him.
Right.
Like, I'm with him. And then Dolan go TV, the man might have a drinking problem,
right.
Anger problem, and come on, man.
Right.
Like, really?
Right.
Like, accusations and right. Insinuating that, like, come on.
Right.
But now you owe this man an apology.
Right.
Definitely owe this man an apology.
I think right now, like, I think that they stopped the bleeding of that part. You know, like, I think, like, it sort of will go away for that part of this Dolan Oakley, I'm with Oakley, you know, the whole thing. As a former Knick, as an NBA player, someone who played with Carmelo in his prime, Kenyon Martin, what do you think is a fix? Just as a fan, just as a player, What do you think is a fix for the Knicks at this point? Do you trade? You understand contracts, obviously, way better than me. You know his contract. What do the Knicks do to get back to be to back on track?
To start, because then Dolan and I go sell the team. That's
right.
Obvious. It's Phil Jackson, man. Phil did what he did as a coach.
Right.
It starts there. It starts at the people that's picking the talent.
Right.
Like my last year in New York. And then the next season, it was down here from there. You know what I'm saying? We didn't do well my last year. We had a bunch of injuries and all that stuff. And Phil was brought in at the end of that year.
Right. The end of 2013.
Yes.
Right. So after the end that of season.
He was brought in, but it was towards the end of the year.
Right, 2013.
So
right.
My end of the year meeting was with Phil. So I sat in the meeting. I left the meeting. My agent was like, so how did it go? Like, you think you're going to be back? I said, you tell me. I don't know. Because I didn't get no feeling out of the meeting.
And what are those meetings like? You're like you're supposed, the season's
like,
over.
Season's over. Like, what's the plans for next year? Like, I was a free agent. Like, I really want to be a part of this. I think I can help this, that, and the third.
You be Phil. So I come in. I sit down. I'm like, what's up? How you doing? Yeah. You sit. And then, and what is he asking you? Is it just like 5 minutes? Is it 15 minutes?
This was quick. Mine was, like, I didn't get no feeling out of the meeting. Like, there was no real dialogue. He asked me about my kids, when my kids stay. Like, nothing about my future as a Nick.
It was just sort of formality.
Yeah. It was like. We're moving. Basically, what I got was out of it, like, we're moving on.
Right.
And you saw the next year, the talent level. And
the Derek Fisher.
And I'll hire Derek Fisher. That was never going to work from day one. So it's all the decisions that Phil has made.
Do you think that Phil Jackson, obviously, his resume as a coach,
impeccable.
And do you think that it's a different skill set and that the skill set of a GM and the skill set of a coach are different? And obviously, we're seeing, like, he hasn't been able to work the magic. And, like, back to the beginning of the question. Do you think Phil... Like, what do you do? You keep Melo.
I keep Melo.
And you get rid of Phil?
You get rid of Phil, and you can build, like, Melo understand, I think now from watching him play as of late, that big fella KP has
It's a tough name to get out.
Kristaps Porzingis.
Yeah. It took me a whole season to get it right.
Other
dude, Hernan Gomez, and the other guy is Kusamingas. I know I'm not saying it right. So anyway, KP, go ahead.
Well, I think Melo is realizing that he needs to be featured.
Right.
So I think Melo is willing to take a back seat, in that aspect. You can build around that.
Right.
But you need somebody in position to pick the talent to fit into that.
But all the people that say, like, you played with Melo in Denver in his prime.
Yeah.
And you see a difference in terms of he doesn't want the ball as much. You feel like he doesn't need to be the man
yeah,
now?
Yeah, I feel that way now.
But who could be the man on that team? Because I don't think we're getting...
I don't think you need the man.
Right.
In order to win.
Okay.
You need
Break
a few
it down.
Guys. You know, like, you need guys. You need guys who know how to play, that's go out and compete on both ends of the floor.
Right.
That know how to play the game, understand the game of basketball.
Right.
You need a head coach that people respect.
Do you think they respect Hornacek?
Not a chance.
Why?
Who is Jeff Hornacek? Played in the league, wasn't a respect factor then.
Mm.
You know what I'm saying? Like, he played in the league, he was a good player, but...
Is it just the disposition as opposed... Because there's been not good players.
Like, Derek Fisher wasn't a good... It started there with Derek Fisher being a coach.
Right.
Like, you can't get done playing and your next year, in the locker room
that
trying to control
bad.
J.R. Smith.
Right.
Amari Stoudemire.
Right.
Carmelo Anthony. Iman Shumpert.
Right.
They looking at you like... You talking about?
Right.
Like, who are you?
Right.
Like, you just got done playing with us.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
Right.
Like, you was lucky. You played with Kobe and Shaq. Like, that's what they looking at him. I know I would be, if he's not Jay Kidd. Jay Kidd can get done playing and go into a situation where there's respect there.
Is it because the type of player he is or just the disposition?
All of it.
Both.
All of it.
Because
all of it plays a factor.
Because there's been other players. Now, obviously, no one went literally from sweating in the locker room to being a coach.
Yeah.
But, like, like Ty Lue. Like, it's not like Ty, but there's a, obviously.
Yeah, there's a pedigree there.
And he assistant coached.
There's a pedigree. He was on the dock. There's a pedigree there. There's something that you can look at and be like, well, he did coach up under him.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
Right.
So he might know what he's talking about.
Right.
But you bring Derek Fisher in there, day one. He ain't never been a head coach. He ain't never been in the locker room to have to sit up in front of a team and talk and game
plan. It's a different skill set.
It's a different skill set. Like, our brains is programmed as players until you have to be a coach.
Right. I got you.
until you have to. And most guys, like you said, they don't come in right away being a head coach.
And even Jay Kidd, a learning process. Brooklyn was a little bit of a mess.
But he was lucky he had vets.
Right.
So he didn't have to coach.
Right. And he was lucky that he had another, like, you know, like he made the switch to Milwaukee, and then I think he figured it out.
Yeah, like.
But, like, there was the water incident. Like, he was bugging for a minute.
Yeah, so it takes time to adjust. And like I said, Jay Kidd was lucky. He had KG. He had Paul. He had guys who had played at high level, won championships. So they didn't have to go out and really coach them.
Right.
He didn't have to teach them how to be professionals.
Right.
And guys looked at him, man, that's Jay Kidd.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
Like, okay.
You get like, man. Jeff Hornacek.
Right. I got you.
You know what I'm saying?
So, all right, I'm going to go to your Denver days because you just mentioned this is a wild squad.
Yeah. Definitely.
You, J.R. Smith, Carmelo, who else is on this team?
Early on, early days, Marcus Camby, Rodney White was there. Then fast forward, we had Reggie Evans, we had Andre Miller, we had Earl Boykins, we had Greg Buckner, we had. Then AI comes.
Before we even get to the AI, the three of you, JR, and Young Mello, and now you're all young. Yeah. You're the oldest out of
those. I'm the oldest of that bunch.
So keep it real. Like, what was the disposition of that team? Like, what was the George Karl of it all? Like, because you guys took it. You took it far.
We didn't. We had pieces. We had good pieces. Like, all the people that I named throughout, like, we changed pieces year in, year out. We had pieces.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think we were ever a team.
Because what?
It was, we didn't have nobody at the top to teach us how to be a team, for one. A coach and that's need to be here, Norris. We'll get to that.
Right.
I'm saying, but, like, when you cater into certain things and we're not being coached in the full aspect of games and situations and all that plays a factor. And then you got young guys who really don't understand how to play the game.
Right.
So you're not taking the time to teach them young guys how to play the game.
And when you say not know how to play the game, everybody's talented. You're professional basketball players. What do you mean by
IQ?
Basketball IQ.
Basketball IQ.
Which means what?
Like, you understanding time, score, situation, whether you... Like, just say, like, if you have a game plan coming in to the game. Like, we're going to play the pick and roll a certain way at the top.
Right.
We're going to force the guy left at the top. We're going to force him left. But whoever's on the ball, let's just say, like, if it's a guard on the ball and his IQ is he not into the game plan, he letting the guy come off and he's going right. And he's going down here. Now we're in a bad way. So it ain't that he ain't hear the game plan. It's just mind is not in it. Like, he's not thinking about the game plan.
Right. He's just playing on talent.
Yeah. Like, I had guys I played with that plays will be called for them, and they don't know their own play. You know what I'm saying? So that's basketball IQ. That's knowing what each guy, like guys who high basketball IQ know where everybody's supposed to be on the court. Whether that's your position or not.
When did your basketball IQ start to go where you could go, I'm proud of my basketball IQ? Did you have it coming in?
Yeah, I had it.
You understood it.
Yeah, I understood. Because I spent 4 years in college being coached by Bob Huggins, and I was taught how to play the right way.
Right.
I was taught basketball from ins and outs and paying attention. So I knew what the point guard was supposed to do, what two guard. I knew every position, offensively and defensively.
Right.
So if you was out of line, I'd say, hey, man, get your ass over here.
Right.
Are you supposed to be there? You're supposed to drop.
Right.
If I go help, you're supposed to be there.
Right.
Like, some guys don't know that.
Right.
Like, some guys just like, okay. Yeah, they scored.
Do you think a lot of these one and done guys that are coming out of college, and even the young guy like Porzingis? I mean, there's talent, you know. But like, do you think a lot of these one and done guys, like you're drafting them as a sort of a project? Like, you know, there's talent. We know, like, what's my man's name on the Lakers? A young kid, Russell.
Russell.
No, the
Ingram.
Yeah, he's. We need to get him. First of all, you need to start eating 3 cheeseburgers a day.
Definitely.
You're not NBA ready.
He needs 7,000 calories.
I don't care how talented you are. First of all, this body's not going to work.
Not at all.
But
he definitely need to get stronger and bigger. But like you said, like, they
number one draft picks are projects now, right?
I'm saying, conversation we had a few minutes ago, right? From 16, like, I'm learning now with my son.
Right.
You got guys right now been like kissing kids' ass from 16 up. 16, kissing your ass. 17, kissing your ass. 18,
are you seeing that even with your own son?
Yes.
The AAU-ification?
Everybody's after him. Adidas want him. Under Armour want him. Nike want him. Whoever. I'm saying, different programs. So they're telling you how good you are, how good you are, how good you are, how good you are. So you get So you get to pick what school you want to go to. So you got five schools. Everybody's stroking your ego. Oh, you're so good. You're so good. Come with us. You're so good. You get to college. You play 30 games. You're not working on fundamentals of basketball
right.
because you're playing games every other week,
right.
Every other day.
Right.
So you're not working on stuff. You're working on team aspects of stuff,
right.
but you're not really working on fundamentals
your
of
skills.
Basketball. Skills, how to learn on defense, how to close out, help side, all that stuff that you need to learn how to play in order to be a complete basketball
mm-hmm.
player. So therefore, you get drafted 1, 2, 3, team that just had 15 wins the year before.
Right.
And your veteran on the team is a year older than you.
Right, he's 23 years old.
You know what I'm saying? And
he don't know how to play either.
He ain't learned nothing. You know what I'm saying? So it's the blind leading the blind. So now you come to this situation, you don't know how to play. And now you're on a bad team, learning bad habits. You're not going to be successful.
What do you, as your son's Kenyon Martin Jr.
Yes.
First of all, like there's a factor. Like if I'm dealing with Kenyon Martin Jr., I know I have to deal with Kenyon Martin.
Yeah.
How are you trying to sort of? And you stayed in college. It's so rare to hear anybody say 4 years.
Yeah.
I wasn't even aware of that.
Yeah.
To stay in college 4 years. How are you protecting your son? How are you guiding your son? How are you sort of influencing your son's choices so he could get the most out of his talent, he could get the most out of his education, and he could get the most out of potentially,
yeah.
if everything stays on track, maybe one day play professional basketball. What are you doing? How much of a, like, are you a hands-on dad?
Yeah.
Not hands-on dad? Has it been hard to sort of, you know, navigate that?
Very hands-on. Just trying to teach him all the stuff that I didn't learn at 16 and have at 16.
Like what?
Just how to be a man, how to be a young man, how to approach the game, how to be a complete basketball player, how to be a complete student, how to be just a young man in this world. The stuff that I'd have no father growing
mm-hmm.
up. You know what I'm saying? That's documented. My mom raised me, my sister raised me. So
where'd you grow up?
I grew up in Dallas.
Okay.
I grew up in Oak Cliff, man. So just teaching him, man, the values of stuff that I didn't learn.
Right.
And that's, it starts at home, first and foremost. Starts in the classroom. But basketball-wise, man, like just not letting him cut corners. Not letting him be mediocre. Not letting him be that kid that I see everybody's becoming. You know what I'm saying? That everybody, they're kissing his ass, but they're not telling the truth.
Right.
Like, this is like, my people that come see me watch my son play, they're like, man, you do such a great job with him at the game. Because everything during the course of the game is positive. Everything is encouraging. Everything is, hey, do this. Hey, come on, get your head together. Hey, get your head up. Do this. Like, I'm teaching him.
You mean just as a fan? Like,
everything is positive on the court.
As a basketball dad.
Yes. Everything is positive.
Right.
But I hear some guys in the stands critiquing their kid in front of everybody.
Publicly.
Me, we could do it in the car.
Right.
We get in the car. All right, you this, that, and the third, woo, woo, woo. You didn't box out. You didn't get back. Get your head up. Your body language. So that's my whole thing now about its body language.
Right.
Body language. Listen, your body language, your body language.
And what does that mean?
Just if you get a foul, you get fouled and they don't call it. He hold his head down, sulking, walking back on defense. No, get your ass back on D.
Right.
They didn't call the foul. You can't get it back.
Right.
Move on to the next play.
Right.
I'm saying like stuff like that people would have told me this early on. Like, all right, Kenyon, like you've been an asshole right now.
Does it make life easier in terms of how your son, how a basketball player is presented to the world, that body language?
Yeah, definitely. Well, it's what people see. You know what I'm saying? Like, you don't want to have that butt. You know, he's a hell of a basketball player, but.
Right.
It's like DeMarcus Cousins. He's a hell of a basketball player, but.
Right.
You don't want to have that butt. I'm saying you want them to say nothing but positive things about you.
Right.
And that's what I'm trying to get him to understand, like. People, everybody's watching.
Right.
At this point, you're making a name for yourself and you're my son.
Right.
So everybody's watching.
Right.
So you have to be that much better. You have to be a great teammate. You got to be first in the drills. I'm on him about all of that stuff.
Right.
On how to do it the right way.
I got you.
Because I've been there.
Right.
Like I know what it is. I did it the right way to get there.
Right.
I had a few bumps since I was in the league.
Right.
But I learned from him, and I know what it takes in order to get to where he wants to be. He wants to play in the NBA.
Right.
And if anybody knows what it takes, I do.
Right.
And that's all I try to get him to understand. Like, you need to listen.
Right.
I'm not going to tell you nothing wrong.
Right.
And this is the blueprint. All right. You got to do is follow it.
Right. Now, your son, obviously, he's got the talent.
Mm-hmm.
but he's Kenyon Martin Jr.
Yeah.
So you grew up, obviously, tougher. Mm-hmm. Your father wasn't a professional basketball player, successful basketball player. So the X factor being the toughness, how do you try to instill that toughness into your son in terms of, because the genetics, the work, I'm sure he busts his butt.
Yeah.
And just, you know, God, you know, that's know, how do you instill that extra sort of X factor of toughness? He doesn't have to be as tough as you.
Yeah. It's like you said, it's definitely, he grew up in a way different environment. He grew up with a silver spoon in his mouth.
Right.
Spoiled kid, all of that.
And he should. That's beautiful. So how do you become spoiled kid to the NBA?
Because of me, keeping him grounded.
Okay.
Not letting him be that.
Okay.
I'm saying, like, that's what I'm there for.
Do you get out there and work out with him, and him?
Yeah.
Do you throw him around?
Yeah, now he's starting to come into his own. He's 6'6 right now, about 180, 185.
How old is he?
16. Just turned 16, Jesus. January 6th. So now he's starting.
You have a 16-year-old son who's 6'6?
Yeah. So now he's starting to ask questions. Like before, he just looked at me as dad.
That's crazy.
He's looked at me as dad. Now he's starting to ask questions. Now me and him in the gym and working on things that I see him, that the things that he does well, that I can help him get better at, and the things that I see all his deficiencies that I can help at as well.
I got you.
You know what I'm saying? So I see the game on the fly. So I know what he needs to work on, things that he does well, and all that. So, but for him, the toughness part, he displays it in a way that way he let people know I ain't gonna take nothing out here. So he displays it in a way sometimes I have to tell, hey, calm down.
Right.
I'm saying? Because he don't want nobody to push over him and look at him as suburban kid, or he's my son. Like so therefore he has it.
Right.
I like, all right. He care about winning, care about losing, he ain't taking no stuff out there from nobody. And I appreciate that. I love it.
Right.
I'm saying? So it's like we was at his game a few weeks ago at Crespi.
And this is in L.A. For people that listen,
these schools are L.A. schools.
These are the L.A. schools, the elite schools. Crespi is a private school.
Definitely.
But these are all basketball schools out in the L.A. area, so you know.
Yeah, so they playing Crespi. My son, I'm having a good game. They winning this, that, and the third. Actually, I'm lying. It was Notre Dame. It was Notre Dame. So we playing or whatnot. That's the difference. So we playing. So it was a little skirmish, and my son right in the middle of it. He had got an attitude during the course of the game. So got fired out a few times. They didn't call it. So he was showing that he was unhappy with the situation.
Mm-hmm.
So guy sitting to my left a couple rows back, like, they're doing a little altercation. Oh, number four is a head case.
Talking about your son? I would be, that's the wrong guy. So what did you do?
I turned around, like, what number you say again? He's like, oh yeah, number four is a head case. I said, say them words again and I'll show you what a head case is. You want to know what a head case is? Say it again.
And then what'd he say?
Did he do the math?
Now
he's trying to backtrack it. Now he's trying to backtrack the statement. Now he's trying to backtrack it. Now he's trying to, like, I didn't know you could hear me. Then it's like, oh, well, I'm sorry. I didn't know that was your kid. Well, first, you shouldn't be saying that about no kid.
Right.
Whether it's my kid or not.
Right.
So now you're trying to backtrack. Well, now you get ignored.
Right.
Now, so some chick he with, I'm like, baby, this ain't got nothing to do with you.
Right.
It got something, like, just let them words come out your mouth again.
Right.
And I will show you what a head case. He's trying to get off the subject. Now, I'm like, no. Let them words come out your mouth again.
Right.
And it's going to take more than this game security here to get me off your ass in here, man.
Right.
Like, he lost. So after the game, he come over though. I'm not paying attention to whatever's going on. He come up behind me trying to, I look and saw it was.
So what are you going to do? What are you going to do in the future? Because the more your son is hopefully, knock on wood, successful and healthy, and he goes up the ladder, there's more fans.
Yeah, I get it. I get it.
Was that a learning thing for you too?
But I didn't heard it all in the stands and all that.
No, but I'm saying, but it's different when it's your son, whether it's right,
wrong, or different. It's definitely learning.
But he's
process.
Also a 16-year-old boy
it's
right now.
It's definitely learning process.
So he's sort of free. It's sort of free game college. How are you going to deal with that?
It's a learning process.
Right.
Maybe I need to go under my headphones on or something. I don't know. But it's definitely learning process, man, and just being there with him and me caring and like during the course of the game, like fouls and stuff being called and
right.
all that, it all plays a factor, man, for me being known as hot-headed or well outspoken, whatever you want right. to classify it as, for me to be able to sit in the stands and
right.
and not lose my marbles in that joint, man.
Let's say your son.
Impressive.
Let's say your son gets into a Kevin Durant incident and he goes yeah. back to OKC. You can't go to that game. You particularly how?
Oh
you?
Yeah, yeah. No, I definitely couldn't because some of the things that people some of the things that people say and they just take it over the line. Sometimes.
Right, right. And it like also like that thing. It's like an event almost. It's like yeah. it's not even serious. It's almost like it's like a parade of hate.
Yeah, like it's like you like I can take all of you suck and
right.
all of them type of things. But then you start like people start crossing the line.
Right.
Man. And for him to say my son's a head case, I'm like
I got you.
No, you want to see one?
I got you. I got you.
Hey, I can definitely show you better than I can tell you.
I got you.
I'm saying you want to, hey, I can, hey, one thing everybody know about me, I'm confrontational.
Right.
I don't bother nobody, but I'm confrontational, man.
Right. No, like, no doubt.
I'm going to finish it. You started, I will finish it.
No doubt. Okay. You had that vibe in the league so much that no one even really, I think you just had that essence as soon as you got into the league.
Yeah, because people knew, like for me, all of like, just say the latest incident with like Oklahoma City and
Golden State
the other day, a little altercation and all that, walking up on me, headbutt, I'm gonna punch you.
Right.
Walk up on me with your
Did
hands.
Did you ever
down.
Have any actual fights in the league?
Yeah.
What was it? Wait, were you at the Garden?
I was on the team.
Denver.
In a suit.
Okay.
Yo.
I didn't like that incident though.
I was on the team in a suit. Had I had a uniform on that day, oh, you'd have liked that incident. Because I would have cleaned house in that motherfucker. Listen, yo, I would have cleaned house in there.
Yeah.
Like, people hitting me after the game, was you there? I'm like, yeah. Had I stepped on the court in a suit,
right.
they would have kicked me out the league forever.
Right, it would have been bad.
For me,
right.
my reputation at that point,
right.
oh, they would have kicked me out the league forever.
Right. That was one of the last sort of big fights in the NBA.
Melo threw one punch. They gave him 15 games.
You know what, though? And Melo's my dude, and I've always stood by him. When he was on Denver, I was like, yo, why are you? First of all, you're not in the incident. Second of all, that was like, yo, that was a sucker punch. And then when the shortest dude on the court backed him all the way up, like, yo, why are you running away from Nate Robinson?
Well, my thing is, sucker punch, if a guy see you walking towards him, it ain't no sucker punch. He's standing right in front of Marty Collins.
But he punched
Marty Collins in his face.
He swung.
No, he didn't swing around nobody. He was looking at him.
Right.
He dropped him.
But it had nothing to do with, like, it was like Melo had nothing to do. I mean,
but
I guess.
It was.
What was that incident?
We're talking about the
Knicks.
Yeah, the Knicks, Nuggets.
What year was that?
I don't.
Whatever. It was when Melo was on. Melo still had braids.
Yeah. So what
Nate Robinson was on the Knicks.
Like what it was, we was beating the brakes off the Knicks.
Okay.
We was beating the brakes off.
Right.
Isaiah Thomas was the coach.
Yes.
George Karl still had Melo and them in the game.
Right.
And Isaiah, old school, Isaiah was like, don't go to the basket.
Right.
He put guys in.
Okay.
Don't go to the basket.
Because they shouldn't be in the game. Like, you blowing us out.
He was beating the brakes off of them.
So, okay.
So he felt the way. So he put guys in the game, and one of them fouled JR. And
right.
Nate fouled JR, I think.
Right.
And it spilled over.
Okay. So you guys, all right, I was a Knicks fan. I hated that. Now going back to all the way back to Melo and Denver
yeah.
and the J.R. Smith of it all, what was that team like? Like, did you guys get along?
Yeah, we were fun, man. We got along. That's the thing. I think we got along too well.
Okay.
I'm saying we were all too much alike.
Okay.
Like, I think we got along too well. That was the thing.
And you
like,
guys,
go like, we had our certain, like, we had our guys, like, we never saw Nene. We never saw guys like Earl Boykins.
Right.
But the core guys who, like, we enjoyed it, man.
Right.
Like, on the court and off. Like,
right.
We showed up to do our job. We played, like, when the gay day we didn't show up ready to play.
Right.
But we enjoyed it, man, on and off the court. And that's probably, I ain't gonna say that was the reason that we didn't win and all that, because we made the playoffs every year, man. We
Western Conference Finals, right?
Against the Lakers. We threw the ball away twice, out of bounds plays. Coaching, we ain't got out of bounds plays. We
didn't right.
Melo go pop. The Lakers knew it. They denied him.
Right.
Anthony Carter threw the ball away one game. I threw the ball to get away the next game.
Right.
Same play. Melo trying to pop. They denied him.
Right.
We ain't got no timeouts. I'm leaning over the line, about to fall in.
Right. That was
turnover.
I got you.
Because they knew we didn't have out of bounds plays.
Right. They knew that. And that's the Phil Jackson.
That's scouting. That's coaching.
Mm-hmm.
Listen, Melo go pop to get the ball. Deny him.
Right. That's it.
That's all it was. And we threw the ball away twice.
You're playing against Kobe in his prime. How great was Kobe?
Assassin, man. Like, he's our generation, probably the best to do it, man. Arguably the best, not arguably, the best to do it in our generation, man.
And how much of focus on the team is it, like, Kobe, yeah, stop Kobe?
Yeah, he's the one. Like, he makes that go. And like, so what we started doing in Denver after a while, like, I just got tired of George out here just letting these guys. Kobe, he's a scorer. That's what he's been year in, year out. So we got this game plan, man. I just got tired of it, man, just letting him play one-on-one.
Uh-huh.
So I just got to the point that when he gets the ball, I just run at him.
And you're not even guarding him?
I just double-team him. Make him throw the ball to somebody else, man.
Right.
So after the game, George want to come by at half. Oh, that's a good idea. We need to start doing that more. Like, why y'all didn't come up with this?
Right.
Like, why I got to, like, because I'm tired of seeing this man play one-on-one and busting our guy's ass.
Right.
Man. Like, he great. Like, he's out here torching us.
Right.
Run at him. Do something different, man.
Right.
Like, we're giving him a steady diet day in, day out of the same medicine, man.
Right.
He immune to it.
Right.
You got to switch it up, man. So that's my thing about, like, he assassin, man. Like, he just, because everything that he does is a move.
Right. How
you,
so?
You cut him off. Like, most people work on counters just to be working on counters.
Right.
Like, everything Kobe do is deliberate. And there's a move. Like, if he goes right, he's going right. If you cut him off, he has a counter for that.
Right.
And he has a counter for, if you cut that off, he has a counter for that.
Right.
So everything is instinctive with him. Like, his instincts is crazy. He used to run a play on the sideline where Kobe would throw it up to the other guard. He'd get a hand back, and he'd come off the little pick and roll. So we used to switch it. Kobe came off one day. He going up to shoot it off the little toss back. I'm all over the top of it. I'm getting ready to block it. He shot that thing off the glass with his left hand.
Are you serious?
Tap me on my ass. I said, hey, man, don't do that no more, man. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's that. Like, that kind of thing.
Right.
That makes him great.
The I Am Rappaport Stereo Podcast is sponsored by Casper Mattress, an obsessively engineered mattress at a shockingly fair price. You could try a Casper mattress for 100 nights risk-free in your home. If you do not love it, they will pick it up and refund you everything. With over 20,000 reviews online and an average of 4.8 stars, Casper is quickly becoming the internet's most popular mattress. They have sheets, they have pillows, they even have doggy beds. Go to Casper.com. Save $50 towards any mattress purchase by visiting www.casper.com/Rappaport. Use the promo code Rappaport. Try a Casper mattress 100 nights risk-free in your home. If you don't love it, they will pick it up and refund you everything. Go to www.casper.com/Rappaport.
Gamertag Radio is headed to E3 2017.
E3 is one of the biggest events for Gamertag Radio, and you don't want to miss this.
Join hosts Danny Pena, Paris Lilly, and Peter Toledo direct from the convention center floor.
What are the plans for Microsoft? We're going to see more new titles from Sony PlayStation. And how about Nintendo? Interviews, roundtable discussion, previews, hand-on impressions, and more.
E3 2017 coverage on Gamertag Radio.
June 11th through the 15th. GamertagRadio.com or play.it/Gamertag.
The top five players that you were never teammates with, that you played against during your career, who were the top five players? You're making no teammates.
Okay.
So you were never teammate with Kobe, right?
Not at all.
Kobe. So if you're doing your top five, these are the best guys you ever played against, and you got to do a lineup.
Tim, Kobe, KG, definitely them three. Tracy McGrady.
In his prime. He was ridiculous.
He just a flat-out scorer, man. Him and Vince was tough. Ray Allen, shooting guard.
Okay.
Kobe, Ray, Tim, KG.
Who's your point? Never a teammate.
Probably Terrell Brandon.
Really?
Oof. Yeah, somebody like Terrell Brandon.
Now, you mentioned KG. I always loved KG as a competitor. Mm-hmm. Now, he's always out there talking. The whole game. I don't know if he's talking to himself, talking to other players. What is he saying, and would he talk to you?
No, he don't say nothing.
Okay, he didn't say nothing to you. Now, what's KG's deal? Give me a KG story.
I got a few.
Because
KG's.
I'm always like, KG, you're talking, and then when it got to the next level, you're not talking. You're walking. And I'm not saying like you got to be a fighter. This is you basketball players. But I felt like if he could punk you, he would punk you.
Definitely. Oh, of course. That's anything in life. You know what a porch puppy is, right?
Yes.
Like, you know what porch puppy
is? Explain that to the people.
Like, for the people that don't know what a porch puppy is, like, because you ever go by somebody's house and they got a little dog on the porch that just all he does is yap, just barking, just uncontrolled. Everybody that walk by, he barks. He's in the window. He's just barking, behind the screen, just barking. Open that screen up, open that gate up, and let somebody.
He's not a guard dog. He's a porch puppy.
He's a porch puppy, man.
Right.
Like, I like KG.
Right.
Like, me and him, but I, like, for people who he know wasn't going for that, like, I ain't going for none of that talking out here.
Right.
Like, you ain't going to be disrespectful out here to me. Like, nah, we going to get it.
Uh-huh.
Like, so we were playing in Boston. We was with the Nuggets, and Paul Pierce and Dante Jones had some kind of beef. Over
right. A lot of people have beef with Dante over the years.
Because Dante play basketball in a different aspect.
How
like,
so?
Oh, Tay trip you. Tay do all anything legal or illegal
right,
during
right,
the course of the game.
Right.
So him and
so
Paul.
So he brings it on himself a little bit.
Yeah. So him and Paul get into it. They got this thing going or whatever the case may be. They barking during going into the timeout. They barking. And KG comes over there. Act like he finna get involved. So you want to get involved? Guess what? I'm going to get involved.
So you say what?
You better walk your ass to your huddle and get from over here.
You can't. You cut right to the point.
Yes. You better get your ass from over and walk to your huddle. Oh, ain't nothing, Kmart. Just keep playing hard, dog. Just keep playing hard.
And you say,
ain't nothing else to be said after that.
It was very clear what it was.
Yeah, like I told you, I want problems.
Right.
I'm not going to shy away from it. I don't
right.
care who you are.
You
man.
Want you want you
I want action. I want all action. You know what I'm saying? Listen, like, I ain't going to start it. Like, I'm not going to start it. But I want all action.
I got you.
I'm physical. I'm confrontational, man. Like, I ain't got no problem mixing it up.
I got you.
Whether it's just going to be basketball, we can keep it basketball. And we can play as hard as we can go to the line.
Right.
To the limit to where they allow us to play.
Right.
You want to take it over? We can go. Listen, I tell people all the time, listen, I bring my ignorant man with me out every time I leave home.
Right.
I don't never leave my ignorant part of me at home. Never.
I got you.
He ain't in the forefront, but I don't never leave home without it.
Was he ever in the forefront? When you were younger, was he more in the forefront?
Yeah, definitely.
As you gotten older,
man. I've had to learn that I can't put my hands on everybody.
Right.
Like, my 4 years in college, man, I had to fight with somebody every year on my team, man.
On your team?
Every year. I put my hands on somebody at Bob Huggins practice every year.
I like it.
Every year, I put my hands on somebody, man.
Who were the players in the league that you sort of respected that had that same disposition? Because game recognizes game, so you guys are just going to play.
Jerry Stackhouse.
Tough guy.
I think Zach Randolph had that same disposition. Right. The disposition out there that people didn't mess with.
Steven Jackson.
Jack was one of them.
Who now? There's other dudes that are nerds. I say nerds, and I don't mean that in a disrespectful way. Because I listen.
Another person that people didn't want to try, people didn't look at him in that aspect, is Kobe. Like, Kobe will fight you.
Right.
Like, Kobe will fight you. That's what, like, all the basketball skills and greatness and all that. Kobe will knuckle up with you.
Right.
I'm saying that's the beauty of it. Like, all that said, and you want to cross the line with him, he gonna go there with you.
He didn't care.
He didn't care.
Now Chris Childs caught him with a two piece.
It's close range. He didn't back down, though. I'm saying it's close range. He was in close proximity. So that's my whole thing. Like, if we going to get it, we're not going to be out here arguing and talking. I'm going to punch you in your – and let's see your reaction to it.
But Kobe had that – Kobe was ready to go.
Yeah, him and Doug Christie got into it on the side. They choking each other out on the scores table.
Right.
I'm like, he ain't afraid to mix it up.
Right.
Was it him and – yeah, like, they ain't afraid to mix it up, man.
Now, you mentioned on your all not teammate team, like a guy who just seems like he doesn't even like the disposition, other than the fact that he's 7 feet, never even – like, the way he talked, the way he walked, the way he carried himself, even on the court. But if you ever – like, I came across him a few times off a basketball court. Mm. Like, this guy is just, like, swimming through life. Tim Duncan. He's just a basketball player.
Basketball player, man.
But bust your – but yes. What made him so great? What was so great about him? Because
he played at his speed. You couldn't speed him up.
He would slow it down.
Like so you couldn't get under his skin. Like you couldn't speed him up. You couldn't frustrate him. Like all the stuff that I would be able to do to people, like just during the course of the game. Me constantly bumping you, holding you, grabbing your arm.
Nothing made any difference.
It didn't matter to him. No matter what I did, no matter what nobody doing the course of the game, it was business at hand.
He's not paying attention.
Business at hand. Like, this is like back in the day, him and KG all right next to him, lips all on his ear. Just blah, blah, blah,
I remember spitting it, smiling at him. Like, what are you doing?
It don't matter. Guess what? Finna go out here and business at hand.
Right. And it doesn't mean he's soft. He's just like, he's just here to play ball and win.
Yeah, I'm out here to win championships. I'm out here to win this game and win championships.
And I'm going
to
score 30. I'm going to get 20.
And 20 and 7 and 5.
And we're winning the game.
And we're going to win the game, and we got a shot every year to win a championship.
So going back to the Denver days, which I could say the big wild three, UJR and Melo, then you bring in the X factor of all X factors. Well, he's still sort of in his prime, but there was so much sort of, like, by the time Allen Iverson got traded, it was such a craziness around his personal life. There was such a craziness around how he was being viewed in Philly. What was Allen Iverson like in Denver? What is the realities of playing with Allen Iverson? Talk about the beauty of Allen Iverson and just like what that was like at that time.
It was a plus, man. It was a few things I never thought I'd get to do in my career, and a lot of them happened early. Like, well, me playing on the team with J. Kidd, for one. Playing on the team with Allen Iverson is another one. Never thought something like that would be feasible, man. But when he got to Denver, man, it was like, oh, we all right. Like, that's my guy. Like, we was cool before he got to Denver. And when he got there, it was like the Beatles, man. Like, we all had our own following. But then when he got there, it just took our notoriety as a team to
the star factor.
The star factor. You
know when you're on the road.
Yes, like the Beatles, man. Like, it was really like the Beatles. Like, we couldn't go nowhere. Like, we had to travel a certain way. Like, it was crazy.
It changed up everything.
We were rock stars before he got there.
Right.
And when he got there, we became Paul McCartney. It was that much more attention on us.
I got you.
And we went out and played and competed, but we still didn't have that complete team that we needed in order to compete in the West. We had talent. Like I said, we had talent. We had two of the top five scorers in the league on one team.
Wow.
I'm saying we had Marcus Camby rebounding the ball, crazy, but it just wasn't, we didn't know how to win.
I got
you. So to speak, as a team.
And what is like the misconceptions about Allen? Because I always felt like Allen, you know, when he got to Denver, I felt like, you know, as a basketball player, he was a little bit humbled in terms of, like, he wanted to show, I do pass the ball. You know, his MVP year was beautiful. Like, did you feel like, I mean, you got dudes that, between AI, Melo, JR, this is not even you.
Yeah.
These guys like to bang the rock.
Yeah, definitely.
Like, so you're a big guy. You need to get the ball or go get the ball. Mm-hmm. Was it hard to play with these dudes? You know, in terms of a basketball sense, is it too much banging the rock?
At times, yeah. It's definitely the ball needs to move freely.
Right.
But you understand what those guys have, AI before Melo, and Melo since he's been in Denver before AI got there, what they have been.
Right.
Scores.
Right.
Volume shooters, volume scores. You know what I'm saying? That's what it is.
Right.
You need, like, when AI was with Philly, that's what they needed from him.
And it was beautiful.
They needed that.
And when they figured
it out, they didn't have a chance in hell at winning without that.
Right.
I think, well, we had enough in Denver before AI and with AI. They didn't have to do that.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? They didn't have to be that. I got to score 30 every night for us to have a chance.
Right.
Because we had enough guys that we could have got it done.
Right.
You know? So it takes a strong coach who people respect to be able to reel that in.
Uh-huh.
And be like, this is the way we're going to play. This is the way it has to be done for us to be successful.
Uh-huh.
And we didn't have that.
And George Karl was a coach then.
Yeah.
Now, I'm not even going to get into the George Karl book thing then, now. But, like, George Karl, his numbers are like, yo, this is a great coach. He's been around the game for years. But as far as, like, when you were actually playing, forget the personal stuff that happened.
Yeah, basketball. But it was basketball.
What was – because you played for some really good coaches.
Yeah, so this is all basketball, man. This is, like, not working on end-of-game situations, time score situations that every other team works on. Like, you down a certain amount of points, time score, like, what you going to do in this situation? What you going to do in that situation? Out of bounds plays. What we going to do? The defense. How we going to scheme this? How we going to do that? Everything with George was just play fast. Shoot the ball fast.
That was it.
That was it.
That was the gist of it.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. And that doesn't translate into winning basketball.
Right. Like, but how does he have such, like, a record?
Blessed with great talent, man.
Right.
Just think it stops.
Right.
Hey, Gary Payton, Sean Kemp, Delif Shrimp, Sam Perkins.
Right.
Nate McMillan, that team.
Right.
Then you go, you got Ray Allen.
Right.
Big Dog.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Anthony Mason, God rest his soul. Yes. Irvin John, Tony Kukoc.
Yeah.
Leader, come to us. Melo, myself, JR, like, you've been blessed. Nene, Marl, you've been
but
blessed
But to take it
talent.
To the next level, been, he didn't have
he
that.
He never won it.
Mm.
And there's a reason for that.
Right.
It ain't just because of the people you playing against.
Right.
Because you ran up against Michael Jordan. You ran up. No, it ain't because of that. You ran up against Kobe. No, it ain't just that. There's more.
Now, this thing that happened with him, George Karl put out a book. I don't know if it's out or
yeah, it's
coming out.
It's out.
And you know, he was sort of killing so many dudes and insulting so many dudes.
Yeah.
One of the most, as far as media, press, you know, dudes talking greasy, insulting. Me personally, I grew up where posse was a word where it's like, yo, my posse. The stuff that he said about you, did you know it was coming? When did you find out about it? And like, he had talked so, like, it was so disrespectful and it was so offensive and so crossed the line.
Yeah. It was bigger than basketball.
When did you find out about it?
I was on December 22nd.
You remember the day?
Yeah, because I was taking my daughter to a Disneyland for her second birthday. I was at the gas station. Al Harrington texted me and was like, "Yo, you see what George said?" Like, actually, like, "What the hell wrong with George Karl?" I'm like, "What?" Was like, "What you talking about?" So he sent me the little snippet of what was said.
Right.
I read it. I'm like, "All right, I'll hit you back." So I got in the car. I had time to process. I get in the car. I tell my wife like what was going on. Because she see my face, like, what's wrong? I showed her what was said. So I got the time to ride, because I live in Calabasas, so we was going to Anaheim to go to Disney. So I had that drive to think.
Uh-huh.
Like, what the hell is wrong with this man? So when I got to Disney, that's when I started tweeting. You know what I'm saying? Like, the nerve of this man.
Right.
He crossed the line with it. Like, if it was just about basketball, you didn't like the way I approached the game of basketball.
Right.
Fine. I don't like the way you coach.
Right.
Cool.
Right. It ain't the first time, it ain't the last time.
What I'm saying? So that started it.
Right.
It was uncalled for. Like, there was no need for you to say none of those things, nothing, cross those lines.
Yeah.
But when you fear, like, you first, like, fatherly, like, that's why we act this way.
Right.
Oh, wow.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Like, who are you?
Right.
So I got a chance to get it off my chest a little bit. I didn't go in like I wanted to because I knew stuff was going to come out after the fact.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? But books, man, it's just him. Like, he's just showing, George is just showing the world what I already knew.
You already knew that's who he is. Mm.
He's just showing everybody what I already saw from he was in Denver for 6.5 years, man.
Right.
Like, I played in Denver for 7 years.
Right.
He was there for 6.5 of them 7 years.
Right.
So
you guys know each other.
Yeah, for the most part.
Right. You know what I'm saying? In a business.
For the most part. Like,
you work together for six years, essentially. Like, we look at it like basketball, but essentially this is a working relationship.
It's a working environment.
Right.
That's all it was. Like, you never knew, we never went to dinner together. We never, none of the above. So, like, when all that comes out, you're like, oh, wow.
Right.
Like, so you just read into it further, man, and it took a lot, you know what I'm saying?
Right.
But our relationship in Denver was, like, me and George had our instances throughout the years, you know what I'm saying? It started, like, I played through pain throughout my Denver career. 2 microfracture surgeries, tell a certain, like all kind of stuff going on in Denver. I ain't complaining.
Right.
I'm going out there playing. I'm trying to play. Like I don't. They trying to put me on many restrictions. I'm going off on the trainers and like I want to hoop.
Right.
I want to play.
Right.
And I didn't get. I didn't have to have microfractures sitting at home.
Right.
I did this playing for George. You know what
right.
I'm saying?
Right.
Like I'm out there busting my ass every day. Like doing the stuff that I need to do in order to try to play in the games.
Right.
Which was important.
Right.
So there's a few instances, George, he don't like to practice. Well, games are important.
Right.
Basically on one leg, doing what I'm, so then all this coming out, like this year in, it's always something with him.
Right.
Always something. So it spilled over, like we played, we had a playoff game against the Clippers here, and it spilled over, man. Like me and George sat down, I sat down with him, have a conversation towards the end of the year, like I'm going to sit out for a few games, man, to get ready for the playoffs.
Okay.
All right. So we started Francisco Elson in my spot during the regular season. We getting ready to play the Clippers first round. Go to George, like I'm ready to rock. Like playoff getting ready to start. I made my name in the playoffs. This is lights are brighter, popcorn even fresher.
Right.
Like, let's go.
Right.
Well, I'm gonna start Francisco Elson again. I want to reward him. Played well.
Right.
Huh? Nah, I don't like that. But all right, show team. All right, cool. Start Francisco game one, we lose. Go to him before game two. We lost game one, but you're going to change the lineup back, right? I'm going to start Francisco again. So now you're messing with me. Now you playing games. So game two, start. We down. They put me in with like 3 and some change to go in the first quarter. Took me out with 9 and some change to go in the second quarter. It's like 6.5, 7 game minutes.
Uh-huh.
We losing. I'm dumb competitive.
Right.
Take me out. Eddie Nahari and Greg Bugner on the team. Me and Eddie play the same position. Eddie in the game. Buck a 2-guard. Get Eddie. Huh? I'm over there like Scooby-Doo. Like, what's going on, man? Time going down, we losing. I'm getting even more pissed. Time going down, I'm 3 minutes, 2. That last minute, I was sitting on the edge of my seat. By this time, I'm like this. Watching the clock, like, so 0. I hop up. I'm first one off the bench. I go in the back. So at the Staples Center, the coaches' halftime meeting is in the hallway. They do their little meeting, then come in the locker room, talk to the team. So the team come in first, everybody sit down. I wait like 10 seconds or whatever. Hop up. They in their little meeting in the hallway, George and them, they in the little circle. I go right up to him. You fat motherfucker, I kicked you. Listen, by this time, I'm.
You're gone.
I'm going. I ain't even at the game no more. This is personal.
Yeah, the ignorant guys.
Yeah, he's there in full effect. Listen, full effect. I'm all over and put my hand in his face. You fat mother, I kick yo. You playing with me. His assistant coaches don't say nothing. Don't say one word. Don't step in the way, Kenyon. That's
they
enough.
They didn't
say nothing.
They wanted you to. They want.
So I get that off my chest. I go back in the locker room, threaten everybody on the team. Y'all selfish, you ain't gonna never win nothing. If you feel a way, say something.
Nobody's nothing.
Crickets. So by this time, I'm sitting. So the coaches come, they come in. I'm sitting with my back to everybody. I got my head in my locker. I'm in it crying. Like I'm shaking, crying.
Right.
Because like, I want to do something to this man.
To George.
Listen, I want to beat him up, man. Like, I swear to God, I wanted to put my hands on George.
Right.
Had Latrell Sprewell never choked P.J. Carlissimo, I would have beat George Karl up that day.
You would have been the first guy.
I would have beat George up that day, man.
Kenyon, this is going to be dope.
Oh, I'm ready for it, brother.
Dime Rapport Stereo Podcast with my man Kmart. Two-man weave. Got to go.
Let's get
somebody else is coming in. Yo, this is just the beginning of the beginning.
Yes, sir.
All right, bet.